You're with SBS Radio. Find more great stories in your language at sbs.com.au.
Brazil's President versus the Amazon. That's the new documentary that's coming, a long report, on Dateline SBS Television this Tuesday, 19th of March at 9:30 p.m. And we are talking now with the journalist Amos Roberts, who went to Brazil, to the Amazon, to produce this report. Amos, in the presentation of the report that's coming this Tuesday, SBS is putting that Bolsonaro is called the Trump of the tropics. But will President Bolsonaro sacrifice the Amazon and its indigenous people in order to make Brazil great again? Could you reach a conclusion?
Look, I think it's too early for conclusions, but there's obviously a lot of fairly worrying signs. My feeling is that, on the campaign trail, there were a lot of things that Bolsonaro said that worried a lot of people. And since then, you know, people that he's appointed as ministers are trying to present a more reasonable face. I spoke to the Minister of Agriculture. That's not in the story in the end, but she was trying to protest that there were no plans to do anything on indigenous land and that the Amazon would remain protected. But I think some of the most worrying signs are the undermining of the government agencies that are meant to protect the environment and indigenous people. The, you know, things like FUNAI and IBAMA and the Chico Mendes Institute. There are all kinds of things happening there that will make it very difficult for Brazilian law to be enforced.
You've been to Brazil not long ago, no? You were doing the Zika virus story.
Yeah.
How long ago?
That would have been the beginning of last year, sort of March, was it, I think.
And did you see much difference in the Brazil you saw before and now?
Look, both very different stories. When I was there at the beginning of last year, there was also a lot of political turmoil. And since then, I guess I've been following the soap opera that is Brazilian politics, like many of your listeners would have been. But the Zika story was also very sad. You also felt at that stage it was sort of the recession was very, very bad. People were very worried. There was a lack of faith and trust in public institutions and in the government. And Brazil faces all these crises. And if there's a sort of a lack of confidence in people that are supposed to be responsible for things, then I guess that's when people turn to people like Bolsonaro.
When you decide to go back to Brazil, why did you choose a story about indigenous people and the Amazon?
That's a good question. I mean, there were lots of things, I guess, that we could have looked at in terms of the impact that the new government might have in Brazil. I guess that was something that interested me because I think it's a story that resonates around the world, certainly in terms of the importance of the Amazon to the global climate. The struggles to protect the Amazon have been big news for many years now. And also, I think it's a story that resonates in Australia in terms of the situation for Indigenous people. I felt that a lot of the rhetoric that you heard from Bolsonaro was the sort of thing that you hear in Australia from Pauline Hanson, or that used to be quite mainstream in Australia, you know, several decades ago. There seemed to be a lack of understanding of Indigenous culture, of Indigenous rights. And there seemed to be the belief that really the best thing for Indigenous people was simply to be assimilated and made part of the mainstream in Brazil. And that's something that I'm sure struck a chord for many people in Brazil as well, because there are many problems in terms of the plight of Indigenous people, the statistics there in terms of health and education and so on. We're very familiar with that here in Australia as well.
You visit some indigenous communities in Brazil. What was your feelings being in the Amazon with the indigenous people about their way of living?
Look, I was struck by how self-reliant they were with the fact that they were still living very traditional lives. I mean, the Munduruku, which was the tribe that I was filming with, by and large are still hunter-gatherers, and you know, basically their diet and their lifestyle is still drawn from the forest and from the river that they live beside. So I was very impressed with that, by their lack of material goods, by their lack of desire for any sort of material improvement. But what I was also struck by was the fact that, you know, they had a lot of need for and a lot of concerns about things like healthcare and so on.
What is the story? How you put the story together? What are the parts of it?
Well, the story is, I guess, looking at the impact that Bolsonaro might have in one particular part of the Amazon. We decided to focus on the Munduruku, who live in a village called Saurai Moibu, not far from Itaituba on the Tapajós River. So this is a community, and we were using that as a sort of a microcosm, I guess, for the big picture, because they still live a very traditional way of life on their land, and their lifestyle is threatened by various things that relate to development in the Amazon. There's a railway that the government wants to build to transport soybeans. There is a very large hydroelectric project which is planned, which would flood the riverbanks that they rely on for their fishing and their hunting. There is illegal logging and mining going on their land. And so in terms of how we approach the story, we spent a few days with them and their community, getting a sense of their way of life and the threats that they face. And we also spent several days in the town of Itaituba, especially with the local mayor there, who is a very passionate supporter of Bolsonaro and is very excited about the possibilities, having a government that is very pro-development and that is likely, that is promised to relax many of the strict laws that restrict farming and logging and mining in that area. So it's two very different worldviews, I guess, and that was what interested me, was sort of contrasting these two very different ways of looking at the Amazon.
Could you make a comparison between the situation of indigenous people in the Amazon, what you saw, and the Aboriginal people in Australia?
It's very difficult to make those sort of comparisons, I think. I guess the closest that I would come to a comparison are indigenous groups maybe that live in northern Australia, on land maybe that would have value when it comes to mining and so on. The tricky thing for the Munduruku is that their land has not yet been demarcated as indigenous territory. A lot of this was very new for me in terms of learning how this all worked in Brazil. But, you know, the process for land rights in Brazil under the Brazilian constitution is that there's a whole process that you go through to have the land demarcated as indigenous territory. And once it has been demarcated, it does have certainly a very high degree of protection under the law, under the constitution. And one of the differences, I guess, with Australia is that indigenous territory in Brazil, you can't have mining, you can't have commercial agriculture. The land is there for the indigenous people to live off. And so one of the things that the agriculture minister was saying to me, for example, is, well, you know, what happens if the indigenous people on their land want to benefit from development? You know, what if they want mining? What if they want agriculture? Now, my understanding is that, you know, that most of the indigenous tribes in Brazil are not at the point, certainly in areas like the Amazon, where that's something that they do want. They prefer to live in a more sustainable way on the land without that sort of exploitation. But that, I guess, was one of the differences with Australia. I mean, in Australia and in New Zealand, where I'm from originally, indigenous communities are also very involved in mining and forestry and fishing and so on. And they can sometimes balance in parts of northern Australia, the traditional and the modern. But, you know, in Brazil, I got the sense that it was sort of one or the other, and the government was maybe taking advantage of that to try and open up some of this land.
What do you feel is the future of the indigenous people in the Amazon?
So the thing that really struck me spending time in this community was the sense of fear and of sadness. I mean, as many of your listeners would know, I guess, that these are not new problems. You know, the situation for the Munduruku, like for many other indigenous tribes, even on land that's been demarcated, there are land invasions that have been taking place all the time, illegal logging, clearing of land for pastoral uses and so on. But for example, the hydroelectric project that threatens Mundurukku, the license was suspended as part of the legal process in Brazil because of environmental concerns, because of concerns about how the project would impact on indigenous people. But the Mundurukku, their land has not yet been demarcated. They don't have the same level of protection, and a government has just been elected that is promising to go ahead with these kind of projects. So there was a great deal of sadness and sometimes resignation. I mean, I would speak to the local chief, Chief Suarez, and he would tell me that he really didn't think that the village would exist for much longer. It would just be a name and that his people would be displaced. You know, the following day he'd be a bit more optimistic and a bit more hopeful. I mean, after all, indigenous people in Brazil have survived for hundreds of years, a much longer period of time than indigenous Australians have survived in terms of, colonization. But they were very sad, they were very resigned, and the fear was also very noticeable. Their concern is that they've always had organizations like FUNAI, the foundation that's there to protect indigenous people, or IBAMA, the environmental agency. And if there are problems, they can go to these people and there's usually some sort of assistance that they can get. But those organizations are being undermined now. And they said, who do we go to? Where do we go for help? You know, these are people who have been threatened, that they've received many death threats in the past from the people that are doing the mining and the logging on their land. And frankly, they're scared. I noticed that when there were protests organized by the indigenous communities, and many people were afraid to turn up and protest because they were afraid of, you know, being attacked by Bolsonaro's supporters. So there's a climate that's quite frightening for people. I guess to some extent that's also what we've seen in places like America after Trump's election.
Well, we'll check it all this Tuesday, 19th of March at 9:30 p.m. on Dateline Television. Amos Roberts, thank you very much for talking to us today.
Obrigado. SBS.com.au